Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life. Hi, Ralph. How are you?
Very good, John. How are you today?
Great. I'm so happy you made it. You know, a lot of people think home inspection, you don't have to do that for new construction. What do you think?
Actually, it's a pretty good idea. Most of the time, it's really just a punch list where you go through and you're checking the house. And you'll find a couple little things that aren't finished, appliances that are not completely installed, some missing moldings, missing hardware. And that's usually a good thing if we can find that and we can get those all ironed out.
So things do pop up then.
Yes. But occasionally I do find some pretty major problems with new construction. There was one house I was in a few years ago where it was just horrendous. It was a beautiful looking house. A high-end home, but it was built by people that did not know what they were doing. There were just many, many, many issues with the house.
Did it have structural issues also?
Not so much structural, but installation issues in terms of things that were supposed to be plumb and level were not plumb and level. Showers that were not properly sealed, so when you turn the shower on, you actually got a puddle in the dining room below it.
My goodness.
So this particular house had a number of issues, and it is by far the worst one I had ever been in. But it was something that you walk into a beautiful home, you think it's a new home, you're not going to have any issues, and it's well beyond just a punch list item. So if these issues came up after you moved in, it would probably be quite
devastating.
A big deal.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting. Speaking of doing an inspection, do you start from the basement and work up or the other way around?
I actually go the other way around. I actually start outside the house.
Oh.
So I want to take a look at it, look at the roof, the siding, the windows, the doors, any particular outbuildings which might be at the house, whether they be garages, pool houses, sheds. Inside the house, I actually like to start at the top and work my way down. So we start out inside the attic. We're looking at the underside of the roof, the presence and condition of insulation, and the structural condition. Through the main part of the house, we're checking all water devices, tubs, showers, toilets, sinks. Checking all appliances that stay with the house, so that'll be kitchen appliances and laundry appliances. And then through the main part of the house, we're checking windows, doors, outlet switches, operation of these items. We're looking for anything that might be structural in nature. And then generally in the basement is where we get to all the good stuff. That's usually where we have the utilities, the electrical system, the plumbing system, both the supply and the waste, the heating system and hot water system. And then you can usually get a very good look at the structure from the basement of the house.
Speaking of basements, do you ever have issues with foundation cracks?
Yes. They're actually a pretty important issue. Many times they're not an issue, but you just don't know it when you're looking at it. In general, when you have a vertical crack, that's an up-and-down crack, and it's what I'll call a hairline crack under a 16th of an inch, generally that's what you'd call a shrinkage crack. What happens with concrete, when it's poured, it shrinks. So in long walls, you will generally get these hairline cracks, which are not at all a structural concern. If you do get movement in the crack, though, a separation where it's more of a V-shape, where it's larger at the top than at the bottom, or if the walls deflect in and out and they're not in the same plane anymore, that could be a concern. Or if you get a horizontal crack, one that goes side to side, that could be an indication of a structural problem.
Do you think a buyer should be with you at the time of an inspection?
Well, it's good. It's always good. You can learn a lot about the house being there. They don't have to be. They will get a full written report. They will have a good understanding of what the house is. But it really is a good idea to be there if you can be.
Right, because you can point out certain things at the time. Right?
Yes,
right,
exactly. Same. And we can show operation of the house, a lot of things where we put in the report. You know, we may put a picture of the water shut off and the main electrical panel. But when they're not with us, they may not know exactly where in the house that is. And in an emergency, if you do need to know where the water shutoff is, it's good to know that you get there first thing instead of looking in for
right.
in a number of places before you get there.
Or it might be under 6 inches or a foot of water by that time, right?
Yes.
Speaking of water, are there any issues with basement water?
Yes, there are. Most issues of basement water are really related to stormwater management. That's basically roof water coming down the gutters and leaders on the house, and then also grading up near the house. So what you want is you want a good gutter system on your house. You want that gutter system to direct water away from the house. So if it's above grade, basically you see the pipes. You want them to dump water as far away from the house as you can practically put it. And you want the ground graded so any water that is up near the house will flow away from it. If you have an underground system, that usually goes to a dry well, so you just want to make sure that that's operating correctly. So most issues with basement water are because that water ends up near the house. It goes down the ground next to the foundation, and most people will think that concrete is a waterproof structure, but it's really not. It's porous. It's kind of like a sponge. The water will
go
through it. Don't
they put some sort of like black top of some sort of
Well yes, they can do that, but you know, it's not necessarily a full, you know, it does slow down. Yeah, it's not watertight.
Gotcha.
Correct.
Interesting. Do you have any tips for home maintenance on a home, especially with the different seasons?
Yes. One of them, actually, what we just spoke about with the basement water, is cleaning your leaders and gutters. You really want to do that in the spring and in the fall at a bare minimum. Sometimes you might need to do it a few times in the fall because you do want that water to go into the gutter system and get away from the house. Generally, the other types of maintenance issues are just getting your heating system and air conditioning system operational prior to the season, making sure it's working okay. So you really want to just make sure that your house, as you go into the seasons, all the systems that are changing over are operating correctly.
Before you have to use them.
You
don't turn on the air conditioning when it's 90 degrees outside.
Right. It's good to get it
started
before,
before
then,
that happens. Exactly. Do you do radon tests by any chance?
I do. But one thing here on Long Island, it's really not required. Radon it's actually a byproduct of breakdown from bedrock. So most of New York State, when you get into the city, Westchester, and really the rest of New York State on the mainland is over bedrock.
Right.
So it is required in those areas. Here, Long Island is basically a sandbar. We're
right.
not on bedrock. So I do occasionally get a request for it. I do perform them, but I have not ever had anything come up with a radon issue on Long Island.
Fascinating. So, Ralph, if someone wants to get in contact with you, how could they do that?
Okay, well, you can always give me a call. My phone number is 631-988-0000. I do have a website.
0000?
Yes, that's correct.
One more time.
631-988-0000. Yes, you did hear that correctly.
Okay.
And I do have a website, pacificoengineering.com. And you can find me there, or if you do an internet search, you should be able to locate me.
Fantastic. Ralph, it's been a pleasure having you here today. This is John Christopher, your host of Real Life, broadcasting on WPPB 88.3, the only NPR station on Long Island, and we'll be right back with our next guest, the extraordinary owner of Il Cappuccino in Sag Harbor, Jack Tagliasocchi.
Support for 88.3 comes from Sotheby's International Realty, local experts worldwide. With over 100 international offices, Sotheby's has four Hamptons locations in Southampton, Bridgehampton, Easthampton, and Sag Harbor. Learn more at john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com.
Hi, this is John Christopher from Real Life, and today I have as my guest Jack Tagliasocchi. Jack, you're the owner of Il Cappuccino in Sag Harbor, and Il Cappuccino is been pretty much a fixture in Sag Harbor. For how long has that been that you've had?
Since 1974.
74. But you've had a very interesting career before that. And you were saying earlier that you're originally from Italy, correct?
Yes.
And did you study?
I studied in Italy, yes. You know, my family was in the restaurant business. So I always, you know, stayed with them. But, of course, I went to school. And I started to be an accountant. And I never practiced in Italy as an accountant because I work in the restaurant. But eventually, when I'm down to South America, Argentina, I worked with an Italian company as an accountant.
Did you have family that drew you to Argentina? Because I find that interesting that you went from Italy to...
The interesting story is that, you know, after World War II, I was fascinated to come in the United States. And I went to Milano, you know, to the embassy. The waiting was unbelievable. It was like 10-year waiting or something. See, immigration was open, but they had a quota. A lot of, you know, European country, they had quota because everybody wanted to come to the state. And I was in the spirit to go out of Italy. And with a friend of mine, I said, why don't we go to Argentina? He said, what are you going to do there? I said, who knows? You may get to the United States eventually from there. And that's what happened.
But you ended up in a place called Mendoza, is that correct?
Yeah. In Mendoza, I opened my first restaurant.
Wow. But where, I don't even know where that is. Is that near?
Mendoza is in the, I would say, is in, it's not really in the north, but is on the west side of Argentina, next to Chile, not too far from Santiago. Of course, you have to cross the Ande mountain before you get, you know, to Santiago.
Right.
As a matter of fact, when I came into the United States, I came by ship and plane. I took a ship from, you know, from Chile all the way to Panama, and then from Panama, I flew to Miami.
So with the canal was there at the time, right?
Yes.
So.
And as a matter of fact, I was very impressed because, you know, I had all my paper, immigration paper, about... When you enter the canal, at that time was a territory of the United States. So you have all military personnel. And I remember I was very impressed because they look, those uniforms, they look so sharp, you know. I mean, unbelievable sharp. And I went through that, you know, passport and everything else, so, you know, and the visa. But that's where I came from. And then I was a terrible flight from Panama to Miami. I think...
That was back when they had props, I imagine, right? There were no jets at that time.
No, as a matter of fact, I think it was a C-3. The airplane was a C-3.
Right. So it was
two
bumpy.
Two propellers. And we had a rough, I don't know, maybe they had a tropical storm or something. It was unbelievable.
So did that stop you from wanting to fly anymore? Or was
eventually.
Right.
I've been flying all my life.
Right.
I love traveling, so I've been traveling a little bit all over
excellent.
The world.
Wow, that's fabulous. So so you got to New York. So how did you get from New York now to Sag Harbor?
I never get really to New York.
No.
I get to Long Island. Never landed in Manhattan. Well, I was working down in Florida, Hollywood, Florida, for Giulio La Rosa. Giulio La Rosa was a very popular singer in the Arthur Graffi show, which eventually he got fired on the show. If you read the story.
Interesting, right.
Yeah. Very lovely voice. Very, very nice person, too. As a matter of fact, he became a disc jockey in Manhattan. Eventually. Yeah, when he finished his career.
He became
a
DJ.
Yeah. So I worked for him as a chef for a few years. And I And I got to know Rocky Marciano, which was the heavyweight. I went through a divorce at that time, and I was thinking to come to New York. And Rocky, you know, a friend, he said, "Boy, if you go to New York," he said, I invested some money in the Belgium Village and the World's Fair, Rico Park. I said, you know, I give you a letter or something. I would like for you, you know, work over there so you can keep an eye also, you know. And I did. You know, when I come up, went over there, and unfortunately enough, they were very disorganized. So 1 week I was there, set up everything, you know, start working with the menu, start working with the crew, and before you know, I see you on Monday then, and we finalized good. Monday, he was gone. Another guy was there.
So you're sitting there.
And you start all over again.
Oh, goodness.
And it happened.
Right.
Twice. I said, this doesn't work. And no pay either. So after a month, I called Rocky. I said, Rocky, I'm sorry, but I have to leave. I've been working a month, no money. I go, Rocky, no, he was a good guy. He was a friend.
Sure.
And so I take care of you. Don't worry about it. Don't leave. I said, okay, I got to go ahead.
So you got on the jitney and came out to Sag Harbor?
No.
No, I know there was no jitney.
The app, and I knew a lady, which at that time, you know, we were a girlfriend, and she had family in Long Island, and that's where I came. And that's where it started, really. And the first job I had, it was canoe placing, the old canoe placing, going back when it was on the top.
Wow.
I did an opening over there for an opening because I was a new owner. I had a buffet for 800 people.
That's a lot of cooking.
a lot of cooking. And not too much help either. But we pull them out. So I stayed there a few months, and one of the really was a sharp person that was coming over. He approached me, and he said, "Well, he's a gentleman which is spending his restaurant." He didn't tell me what town, and he's looking for a chef manager, an executive chef. And I said, "Well, what is his name?" "Oh, I can't tell you." "So what is the place?" "I can't tell you." He said, "Well," I said, "no, if it's interesting, please tell to come over and we talk about it."
Jack, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher, and we'll be right back after the short break with my next guest, television personality and animal advocate, Jill Rappaport. Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher, and today I have TV personality and animal activist, Jill Rappaport. Hi, Jill. How are you today?
Hey, John. Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and it's a delight to have you, Jill. Before we start talking about all the wonderful things you've been involved in, let's talk about how did you get to the Hamptons and what attracted you to this area?
You know, I've been coming to the Hamptons for decades, and I've always loved it out here. It's just so great when you live in Manhattan and you work in the craziness of the city and the big buildings and the traffic to 2 hours without traffic, to be in a place that is so beautiful and so tranquil. And I've always been looking. I rented it first and in Southampton and then, you know, Watermill. And just slowly but surely, I was able to be here and get my dream, which is my farm. So I feel so blessed. Yes.
Oh, that's fabulous. So on the farm, you take in a lot of these animals, correct?
Right.
Rescue animals, I understand.
Yes. I mean, at any given time, I usually have 6 rescue dogs, and I lost 2, sadly, over the last couple of years. And I always tell people, you know, when you lose an animal, it's the most traumatic thing. It's no different to me and to the people who have experienced it than losing a family member, because they are our family members. So for me, what's been very cathartic and therapeutic is when I've lost an animal, I immediately rescue another one. Some people say I can't handle that. I'm still getting over this loss. But if I can go to a shelter, and when you rescue one, you really save two, because you take the one out and you make room for another one to come
in.
I
never thought of that. That's right.
Yeah, so it's really a wonderful thing. And again, anybody who's ever rescued a pet will tell you that we're the ones that get rescued. It's who rescued who. I feel I've been rescued by my rescue animals. The gift they give back is, there's no words for it, John.
Right. I know. Animals, especially, I'm a dog lover, and it's fantastic. You know, I always joke about my dog, Lucky, but if anything ever happened to him, I'd be shattered. But
the worst, right?
You know, just don't tell Lucky that.
I think Lucky knows, and he knows how lucky he is,
yes,
right?
Exactly. Now, before you got into animal activism, you were on the Today Show. Did you study journalism or communication prior to that?
Yes, I went to, well, I graduated from Boston University School of Communications. And I have to tell you, I was the number one obituary writer in my class, okay? That was my talent. I had such a flair, my professor said, for telling the story of the person who passed on and the family who was left behind. And I always loved writing. And what's so great about my job, I mean, I worked at WCBS for years. I was the host of PM Magazine with Matt Lauer. I ended up at the Today Show in 1991. I was there for 23 years. And I was, for years, the entertainment reporter on the red carpet, covering every award show, the Oscars, the Golden Globes, the Emmys, interviewed every celebrity. I got to sit down with the greats. I mean, Paul Newman, Lucille Ball, Jimmy Stewart. I had dinner with Frank Sinatra. I mean, I really, breakfast at Tiffany's with Audrey Hepburn.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, can you imagine? To actually be at Tiffany's with Audrey Hepburn and having breakfast? So I really had the most wonderful job. But animal rescue, converting it to being my, quote, animal advocate for the network, was really not a job. It's my oxygen. And I'll never forget it because, you know, for years being on the red carpet, I pitched the story of my dog, Jack, my German Shepherd who changed my life. He had gotten osteosarcoma, which is bone cancer. And we had to amputate his leg, and it was just so horrific. But the outcome was great because he lived a great life. But I went to my boss and I said, I really want to cover his story because animals can teach us so much. You know, here he was on three legs. He never let the loss of a limb stand in the way of living the most amazing life. The other dogs didn't look at him and go, ooh, what's wrong with you? You're missing a leg. They were just so happy to see him and sniffing and wagging. And they can teach us so much about resiliency and moving on and not judging and not being down in the dumps. They just want to be out of pain and loved. So I pitched the story. He said, go ahead and do it. We did Jack's story on his last chemotherapy treatment. And we had gotten emails from all over the world, literally contacted. I mean, I was blown away with the response to my dog, Jack. And I'd been on the show for 16 years as the entertainment reporter. So I went to my executive producer that day, who was Jim Bell. And I said, you know what? Stars don't need my help. Animals do. And I really would love to devote the 6 minutes a week I have on the Today Show to making a difference for animals. I want to, it's one thing to tell people what movie to go see or, you know, how this person looked great on the runway, but is that really going to better our society and make a difference? This is something that is my oxygen, I care about, and we could really make a difference. And without missing a beat, he said, great, be our pet reporter. And I said, well, I don't really like that title. It's a little fluffy for what I want to do. How about animal advocate? And I only say that. You said activist. And I wanted advocate because it activist sometimes connotes a little bit strident
a little
you know, like aggressive. I'm going to be in there, you know, with the fight. It's not it's a fight to save lives, but we're really trying to tell everybody it should be like breathing. This is something we need to do. You know, like they have mandatory wheelchair ramps. Rescue is something we need to educate the public. Everybody really knows about it, but getting everybody when they're considering a pet to only hopefully go to a shelter is what my role is.
Right.
And now I'm on the board of Southampton Animal Shelter, and I'm able to do so much more with that. Every friend that comes out here that's thinking of taking an animal, I said, let's take a little ride to Hampton Bays. So, you know, it's everyone's like, oh boy, here we go. But I'm proud to say I've gotten a lot of animals out in the last couple months, and it's my life. I mean, I'm going there today.
That's fabulous. That is wonderful. So would you say that's the cathartic experience that pushed you over to the side to go into being an animal activist?
Advocate. Yeah, advocate. You know, I've loved, I mean, literally, I feel people that do what I do, people that love animals, it's in your blood. From the minute you let out your first cry out of the womb, you know, it's just embedded into who we are. Every other animal advocate and animal lover like yourself who I meet, it's just a common bond we all share. And although I'm kind of happier with four-legged people, I call them people, pet people, right. Then, you know, I just love animals so much. And I don't think my life would definitely not be complete without my animals surrounding me. And I know that people I surround myself with are pet people. So right. We kind of share the same vision. But the rescue thing is really so important to me because, you know, you go to a concert, you go to a movie premiere, there's always a full crowd, a packed house. Sadly, that's the reality in the shelter world. I have never been into a shelter, and I traveled across the country for all my shows, all my stories, where I see an empty cage. There's always a packed house. And I want to get to the point one day where I can walk in and the cages are empty. You know, ultimately.
Do you think that's possible, though?
Well, it's a vision and a dream. But, you know, and Southampton Animal Shelter is one of the best. But I hope one day we close down. Our dream is to close down. We don't want shelters. We want to have all these animals into a home. And I really wish, and it's so what I call wishful thinking, that there could be a moratorium on breeding. And what about horses? It's even more dire for horses. I was out in Texas and driving cross country. They're turning them out alongside the road. You know, and the whole issue with horse slaughter, I'm a Goodwill Equine Welfare Ambassador for the ASPCA. And at the Hampton Classic, I'm there every year, but I've never shown. I'm there for Adoption Day. And this year we had two horses adopted. You know, people, I'm not saying all, but some people, they show them, they're, you know, jumping and doing whatever they're doing and winning their blue ribbons and buying and selling. And then when they don't have a purpose anymore, they're lame. What happens to them if they don't want to pay the exorbitant bills to keep them? Sadly, a lot of horses end up in situations. Well, most people hopefully can retire them. You would hope they would be a responsible owner where they could take care of them to their last breath. That's what I would do and I'm going to do. But sadly, a lot of people fall on financial hard times. Things happen. And these horses, it's not so easy.
How can someone get in contact with you, Jill?
Well, they can email me, jillanimaladvocate@gmail.com. And that's the best way. And again, more important than reaching out to me, please, I beg your listeners, I promise you, the best gift you can give yourself is a rescue animal. We have amazing shelters all over the country. But please, go to the shelters. I promise you will thank me and you'll be so grateful the rest of your life and theirs.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You have been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people, places, and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, broker associate with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com. Real Life is also brought to you in part by LEAP Compliance, HR's one-stop solution for sexual harassment prevention training and policies. All employers in the New York State are now required to train all employees annually, no matter the size of the company. For more information, discriminationpreventiontraining.com or 646-216-8038.